go!
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today, well, I've literally just walked in the door. I'm back home in Perth after being in Melbourne for 10 days.
I can't believe you're sitting here right now, but good on you, Di. And I'm Monique Chicardo. Your post-Drive to Survive Formula One fan. And today I am sitting in my office in Stavanger, just about to leave to go somewhere else though. So we're like passing ships in the night.
I don't even know how my eyes are open. I'm so tired because right now it is 10 to 2 in the morning, Melbourne time, 10 to 11 p.m. Perth time. And I watched the race at the airport in Melbourne. And I've got to say, it's the only time in the world where I've actually wanted a flight delay. And it happened. Thank you, Qantas.
That's dedication now. You were hoping for a flight delay so you could watch the race. That is dedication to Formula One, and I am so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I actually watched the last couple of laps as I was walking through the boarding. You know, I had to turn it off for a second, scan my boarding pass with my phone, and then keep walking, had my headphones on, and I was watching my phone and on the seat. And then we sat on the tarmac for ages. So I got to see the final laps and the post-race interviews and everything. So that was lucky.
Perfect timing.
Pretty good result. Pretty happy.
I don't think two Australian girls could be any happier with the result of that race. I mean, it was from start to finish, led by Oscar Piastri, and he finished by the end of the race, 9 seconds ahead of Lando, because Lando did have some brake issues there, but he would have finished 3-4 seconds ahead. So, Oscar.
Yeah, I know. His first pole position and his first win from a pole position. So that's, you know, excellent. Just excellent. An excellent result for Oscar Piastri. I'm stoked.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of catapulted him up the driver's standings a little bit now as well with his 25-point win. Mm-hmm. So Lando's still sitting at the top. And then I think it might be George Russell. And I'm pretty sure, is it Oscar's maybe fourth? I probably should have checked that before I started saying that.
So Oscar's currently fourth in the driver standing. So it's Lando on 44, Max on 36, George on 35, Oscar on 34, and then the 18-year-old Kimi Antonelli, fifth in the driver standings at the moment. And then a Williams in sixth, Alex Albon.
Oh, it's so exciting. Yay. I thought I was close. I forgot Max was in there because Max has been a bit of a no-show all weekend, really.
Yay.
So, I know. After today, we've had three races. So, we've had two races and one sprint race, and not one of them has been won by Max.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I mean, it's only three races.
It is only three. But yet, there he is, second in the Drivers' Championship, only 8 points behind Lando. So, he's still there. He's by no means down and out. But let's backtrack. Okay, so let's start.
Yes, we got sidetracked.
Yes. Exciting race weekend in Shanghai in China, round two of the 24-round Formula One Championship this year. Sprint weekend. So what that means, if anybody doesn't know, is that instead of free practice 2 and 3, they have a sprint qualifying and a sprint race. The sprint race is about 100 kilometres, which in Shanghai was 19 laps. And that was a great result as well because Lewis Hamilton got pole position for the sprint race in the Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton, and he won it as well. So he dominated that race. It was never really in question. And so good to see Ferrari on the top step and just so good to see Hamilton get a result with his new team in red. That was super exciting. I loved watching it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's a sprint race, so it's not a race, but a win is a win is a win, in my opinion. You know, a win feels good no matter what. Yes, it's only 8 points, but a win is a win is a win. And to see him come back after having not such a great year with Mercedes last year or the year before, to come back and have a win so early on in the season is just phenomenal.
With a new team, it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, and you could see how happy he was as well when he qualified on pole. The radio message was just, it was just so beautiful. He was so happy.
Mm, yeah, totally. And there's points for a sprint race, so it does count. It's just not as many for the main race. So the win is 8 points. So Hamilton locked that in, and Oscar came in second. So he scored 7 points in the sprint race. Max Verstappen in third, 6 points. Russell, Leclerc, Tsunoda, Antonelli and Norris. So the top eight get points in the sprint. I know, Tsunoda in sixth for the sprint.
Yeah. The RB is looking to have so much pace at the moment. Both Tsunoda and Hadjar have been doing really, really, really well. But as I assume you were just about to say, in the race, the feature race, poor Tsunoda, he had a front wing failure. So he didn't even hit anything. He didn't hit anyone. There was no debris on the road, nothing like that. It just looked like he was traveling in dirty air and the vibrations just got a bit too much and it just completely split. And so he was forced to come in for another pit stop, which saw him finish in 16th, plumb last. And there were only 16 finishes in the feature race because we had an Alonso DNF, and then you would have got off the plane to a bunch of notifications on your phone.
Yes. What? What? Ferrari's disqualified? Gasly disqualified?
Three disqualifications.
So the Ferrari disqualifications were for a rear plate at the back of the car that was 0.4 millimetres too thin. That was Hamilton.
Both Leclerc and Gasly were like 500 grams underweight by the time they drained the fuel out the car. So that was there. And that's what happened to Russell, actually, when he got disqualified last year after doing the one-stop strategy and coming from like way back in the field to win a race. He got disqualified because his car was too light by the end of it. And that's not allowed. No. Naughty,
it's
naughty.
Rules are rules. But I mean, like 0.4 of a millimeter just seems like, come on. But it rules are rules, you know, numbers don't lie. Yeah. No points for either of the Ferraris. And gosh, can you imagine those debrief meetings? They've gone from a high to an absolute crushing low.
I mean, the three disqualifications, but great news for the rest of the field because obviously we had Piastri who finished first, Norris finished second, Russell finished third, Verstappen finished fourth. But then we had the two Ferraris in sixth and seventh. So take that out of the equation. And we pulled Ocon up to fifth from seventh, Antonelli up to sixth from eighth.
Yeah.
And then Albon up to seventh, Behrmann up to eighth.
Behrmann, God, he drove well. Yeah.
Oh, I know, because he came when he changed onto his medium tyres and in the pit stop. He tore through the field.
He started in 17th on the grid and finished in 8th. He was overtaking like a boss.
He was doing really, really, really well. And I think he took the last points position before all the disqualifications. But then because of all the disqualifications, we pulled Stroll and Sainz up into points.
Both Williams scored points with Sainz and Albon, which was just fantastic. I mean, Williams is your big surprise for this year. And as I've said, it's a good call and that's really great to see. You may have seen the rumours though. Where is our Kiwi friend, Liam Lawson?
He actually qualified in 20th. Qualifying in 20th, he's finishing in the very back. The only reason he got to 12th is because Hülkenberg and Bortoleto, they had some sort of issue. Bortoleto spun. So he ended up like 40 seconds back. And then I don't know what happened to Hulk, but he ended up quite a fair way back as well.
Yeah.
And then he overtook Doohan, and then Tsunoda had to have that extra pit stop because his front wing broke. So that's the only reason that Lawson finished in 12th.
All these other drivers with issues or disqualifications, in Alonso's case, a DNF with his brakes on fire in lap six, the only other driver Lawson beat, I guess, is Jack Doohan, who's in an Alpine, and Lawson's in a Red Bull. So you kind of expect the Red Bull to be faster than the Alpine, right? That Red Bull is known to be difficult to drive, and he was probably so excited to be promoted straight into the big league of Red Bull, but I think we both said that having a bit more prep would have probably been better for Lawson, and we're seeing that play out at the moment.
Yeah.
It might turn around. It might not. Let's just see.
If anyone happened to listen to our podcast two podcasts ago where we were making our predictions for the season. Lawson was my prediction to lose his seat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before any of the races had been run.
Yeah. Wow. Mon, you're a bit spooky with your predictions. So far, they're all
lining up pretty well.
Mm. The rumours flying around at the moment is that he's going to get dropped and, well, not dropped, but swapped out for Yuki Tsunoda in the V-carb, the RB for Japan. That's a juicy rumour.
I have been seeing absolutely everywhere lots of comment from... Well, not lots of comment, but people are kind of hyping up this whole, is Helmut Marko going to make a decision? Is Horner going to make a decision? Because they had such high hopes for Lawson coming in, and it didn't help that we had such a focus on him in Drive to Survive and about how good he was and how quick and aggressive he was. And he, because I also said I thought we'd see Yuki as a race winner, and given how well the RBs have been doing these last few races, that is definitely not out of the question because they're up there in the top 10.
They are. Oh, one thing that was really good in today's race as well was that at one point Alex Albon was leading the race and it's his birthday today. Also my mum's birthday, shout out to my mum. My dad's birthday was yesterday, shout out to my dad. And my niece's birthday on Friday, day before. I've had a run of family birthdays, so yeah.
Are we including Albon in that family birthday? Because you may as well.
Well, he's not technically a cousin, but I'm sure I could find a link somewhere. So,
happy birthday to all your family and to Albon.
Thank you.
I think there was a point in the race actually that Albon got really terse with his race engineer because his race engineer came on to tell him something, and he's like, "I know we're doing really well. I know I'm good. I know I'm." It was basically a shut up.
And even Charles Leclerc, he asked for some information. He asked where he's losing time. That's right. And his race engineer said, I think turn one and turn two. And he's like, yes, I know this. You've told me this 50 times. And even Hamilton was like, man, you've got to give me some feedback. You've got to give me something more. So the Ferrari race engineers, they don't seem to have hit their stride yet. And that chemistry between race engineer and driver is not quite there yet. Let's hope that that happens in the next race or two.
It's super important for the communication, you know, and it's just interesting that one driver was like, you've told me this, stop telling me this. And the other driver was like, dude, give me more information.
You'd think that Charles Leclerc's race engineer would give him what he needs, given that it's not his first year with the team. In other hot news is that Esteban Ocon, his race engineer in the Haas, is Laura Mueller, the only female race engineer, first female race engineer that we've had, and the first time a female race engineer has scored points in a race. So that was a little bit of something that I saw in the Uber on my way back from the airport just now.
Oh, that's so fun. Yay for that. We love all the female power and, you know, good segue into the fact that I watched the Formula Academy this week as well.
I didn't watch any of the Formula One Academy. I really wanted to, but I just had a lot of family commitments on in Melbourne. So, yes, I didn't get to it. How was it?
It was really, really fun to watch. Unfortunately, our Australian girls just didn't quite have it together. Joanne Chaconte got hit from behind in the first lap. So she DNF'd, and then Ava Agnostiades, she finished towards the back. I think it was about 14th out of the 16 that finished, or 13th out of the 15. So there was a really, really big difference. So the winner of the race was Dorian Pin from France, and Dorian raced last year as well. So you can see the difference between these women, between these girls who have driven a season already, because all the front markers were people that raced last year. It was a really good race, though. I enjoyed it, and it's nice to have so many things to watch on the weekend.
When Quali was on was during a big family party, and I sat and watched Quali with, I think he was 9, a little Felix, who's a friend's son, and I was explaining how Quali works. It was so fun. First time I'd met this little kid, and when he left the party, I said, oh, thanks for watching Quali with me, and he came and gave me a big hug. It was so sweet.
Oh, I love it. Inspiring the next gen.
Inspiring the next gen, doing my bit for the sport. Yep.
I was just looking at my notes, Di, and just flipping back to Formula One and how we were talking about Liam finishing in 12th for the race. I just remembered Jack Doohan got a 10-second penalty for pushing Isaac Hadjar off the road.
You're right.
Yeah. Had that not have happened, he would have finished ahead of Lawson. Lawson, technically, if we don't take into account that 10-second penalty, he would have finished
in 13th.
Gosh, can you imagine the pressure on Liam Lawson's shoulders?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, if anyone is across Formula One stuff on social media, the commentary from the fans is just, it's actually quite sad to see and quite disheartening. You know, there was a post, it had nothing to do with Liam Lawson. I think it might have been about one of the disqualifications or something like that. And there were just hundreds upon hundreds of comments about Lawson and how he shouldn't be in that seat and how he's shit and how he didn't come to make friends or get points either. And I was like, oh, come on, this is a bit much.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Geez, that's harsh.
It's a perfect storm of awful at the moment because, you know, he's trying to learn a new car. The car's not performing either. Like if Max is not winning, there are performance issues with the car. He had such high expectations put on him coming in. He's got, all eyes on him. It's just an awful position to be in. There's something to be said about going to Williams or something instead of going to that Red Bull seat because the pressure is not as big.
Intense. But I will give a shout out to Kimi Antonelli. He did get driver of the day. I did hear Martin Brundle question that, saying, why did he get driver of the day? You know, he started in eighth. Finished in eighth. Well, actually, now he's finished in sixth because we've had a couple of disqualifications. He drove a solid race. He's looking, him and Ollie Bearman were just super impressive today, I thought. And Isaac Hadjar, actually.
Yep.
You know, he just had a show last week. I'm not even going to pretend it was anything but awful for him. Just hitting the wall on the formation lap in a very, very wet track in Melbourne. Didn't even get his first Formula One start. And today, finishing just outside the points and driving a solid race, doing overtakes, defending. He did really well.
He did. And the RBs were one of the few teams that went for a two-stop strategy instead of the one-stop, which obviously didn't help them because that's a 20, 24, 26 seconds lost. So had they have not sent them in for that second pit stop, who knows where Hadjar could have finished because he qualified in
seventh.
Yeah, there you go. It could have been a really great weekend for them if they hadn't have made that two-stop call.
Yeah, but they might have run out of tyres. The tyre deg might have been so bad that he could have ended up in a wall or in the gravel or something. So it's really hard to make that call, I think. I mean, Hamilton did a two-stop strategy as well. And in the end, you know, he caught up before the disqualification. Hamilton came on the team radio and said, this isn't working if you want to do a swap of the drivers. So he suggested that, which I nearly fell over. I don't think I've ever heard a driver suggest that, like put my teammate in front of me because I'm struggling. But that's what Hamilton did. So the team said, okay. And then they asked for the swap and Hamilton's like, hang on a minute. I'll tell you when we're doing the swap, like not now. His car started coming alive or his tyres warmed up or whatever. He was finding the pace. And then either way, Leclerc got in front of him and Hamilton was chasing Charles for the rest of the race.
Which also shout out to Charles because he, I think it was in the like first lap, he broke the end plate on his front wing.
Oh, that's right.
And raced the entire race.
You're right. So Charles Leclerc on the first lap, him and Hamilton, it was a racing incident. There was nothing in it, but they did clip and the end plate of the front wing on Charles' car broke off. So he didn't have that end plate, which helps with downforce and aerodynamics. And he drove the whole race without it, but he was finding pace. He was faster than Hamilton. And they were saying that the front left tyre was degrading a lot in Shanghai. And that was the tyre that all the drivers had to watch. And I was wondering, I wonder if because of that end plate had broken off, maybe it's like done something to the car where that front left is not degrading. And then good old Bernie Collins came on the radio and on the commentary, rather. She's, you know, an ex Formula One strategist, and pretty much said maybe it's rebalanced the car. But
yeah,
then in the post-race interview, I did see Charles say that it was really difficult for him to drive. It was a really tough race.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I feel like it was a really exciting race all in all.
Yeah, it was.
I think just because there were so many different strategies going on and you didn't know what was going to happen and where people were going to end up, and that they're the really good races, I think.
Yeah.
Not so much Australia, where it was absolutely hammering down with rain.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of, you know, unplanned, unpredicted.
You don't want safety cars in racing. Well, I don't. I find that pretty dull. You want to see overtakes. We, the viewer, we were kept guessing the whole time, are they doing a one-stop strategy or a two-stop strategy? The team radios were doing plan C, we're doing plan A. Do you think we can do plan B? And we don't know what their plan A, plan B, plan C is. They talk in code, so the other teams don't know what's going on, of course.
Unless you're Russell. Because Russell outright said he wanted a one-stop strategy on the radio.
It must be hard. I remember one year Ferrari was saying to Charles Leclerc, plan, I think it was plan E.
F.
Like, how many plans? Oh, plan F, yeah. How many plans have they got? And what do these drivers have to remember about all these plans when they're tearing around a racetrack at 300 kilometres an hour? It's crazy. So race two, this race was the Chinese Grand Prix held in Shanghai, which is a mega huge, colossal city in China, one of the biggest cities in the world. The resident population in the city itself is nearly 25 million people. In the greater metropolitan, I know, 25 million people, that's like Australia's population in one city. And I know Australia's sparsely populated, but yeah, that's just huge. And the greater population of like Shanghai and its surrounding areas is like closer to 40 million.
Wow. Oh, no. Wow. That is a lot of people.
Very high density. There's 3,905 people per square kilometre. It's nearly 4,000 people per square kilometre. I know, right?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I could deal with that. I mean, I could probably visit, yes, and see it and be amazed by how many people there are, but living like that, I mean, I live in a very small place now, but I have lots of space.
I know, I'm the same. After Margaret River and having space and beach and coast and, it's quite the contrast going into a big city. And, yeah, I can't imagine what it would be like living. I mean, I've lived in London, I've lived in big cities, but a place like that's just.
It just blows my mind. I don't understand how you can fit that many people, but. I'm obviously, people can't tell by the way we're talking. Neither of us has been to Shanghai before. Have you ever been to China?
No, I haven't been to China. I was really super keen to go before COVID, and I was keen to go to China because I wanted to eat. I wanted to go there and eat all the local food. But no, didn't get there. And have you ever been to China?
No, the closest I've got to getting to China is I've been to Taiwan. So I went to Taipei. And that was such a cool place. It's like a mix of Chinese culture and it feels very Japanese as well. There's quite a Japanese influence. So, but not mainland China, obviously. It's Taiwan. So I've not been to China either. But again, I'm like you. I would love to go for the food. I really just think it would be super fascinating.
Speaking of food, and I always think of Yuki Tsunoda when we start talking about Formula One and food, is that my Uber driver in Melbourne who took me to the airport drove for Yuki Tsunoda last year at the Melbourne Grand Prix, and the drivers are not allowed to eat out during the race, like the 3 days of the race. This Uber driver told me that they were supposed to eat the food at Crown where they stay. But Yuki told the driver, where are you from? And this driver was from Afghanistan. And Yuki said, do you know any good Afghanistan food? And the driver's like, yeah, sure I do. And he's like, can you go get it and bring it to me? I can't go out. So he became an Uber Eats driver, if you like, for Yuki Tsunoda. So Yuki had Afghan food two nights in a row and also wanted Indian food.
Oh, wow.
Little fun story.
Yeah, and die with the fun facts.
Well, I wore my Ferrari hat for the plane. So the Uber driver was, you know, started talking to me about Formula One and
told you the little story. There you go. You wouldn't go to China if you didn't have a big appetite. That's the wrong thing to say. That sounds really weird. Yeah. It feels like if you're interested in China, I feel like you'd have to have a big appetite, because I feel like food is so intrinsic to their culture that it's just, you can't go and not be excited about trying everything. So, yeah, but obviously, you know, Shanghai being a city of so many people and such a size, there would be a million and one places to go to eat. So when I was looking at what there was to do in Shanghai, I just avoided all the food stuff, because also if you haven't been there yourself, I don't think you can't recommend places. Like that's silly.
No.
So yeah. I was having a little search. I was gravitating to all the things that were more nature inspired, which in a city of so many people and coming from Australia and now living in Norway where I'm surrounded by nature and it's not very densely populated, it's just funny that that was what I was drawn to. But I found this place. It's called the Shimao Wonderland Intercontinental. It's 20 miles, so I don't know what that is in kilometres.
20 miles is about 30 kilometres. Hey Siri, what is 20 miles in kilometres? 32.19! Oh,
yeah. All right. So this hotel is about 32 kilometres out of Shanghai city. So it's still in the Shanghai area, but it is this five-star hotel that's built into the side of an old quarry. There's this big lake at the bottom with a waterfall, and
nice.
It's like 14 stories down the side of this quarry, and it looks so cool. It's kind of like in its own little world, and it's got its own little biosphere. Is that what you call it?
Microclimate?
Yeah, and its own little microclimate, and it just looks really, really cool. And they built it obviously as an attraction, but it's also being built to prevent like the quarry from collapsing in further. So they've kind of like dual purposed it, and it just looks so cool.
Does sound cool.
There was that, and then one of the other places, it's very well known in Shanghai, is the Yu Garden, which is a 5-acre garden. It says it was built in 1577 with Ming Dynasty pavilions,
ponds,
bridges. Like,
yeah,
I just think it'd be so beautiful to walk through there. And I assume there's probably a lot of people there, though, if it's well known. But
yeah,
you know, it'd be a nice break from the skyscrapers. And
Shanghai, in my little research, obviously you've got super modern, ultra modern Chinese big city, as you would imagine. Mm. But there's also an old city in the old district with lots of laneways and the traditional Chinese architecture. So it seems to be a city of contrasts.
There was a really cool area that I, again, in my research found called Tianzifang. I'm so sorry if I'm saying all of this wrong. This is part of the old city and it was a former French concession area. There's lots of European and Gothic architecture and stuff there as well. It's the old city and all these influences from other countries, you know, came through. To me, that sounds like the really fascinating part to explore, to be honest. I mean, you can go anywhere and see the modern skyscrapers.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, the Chinese have been big traders for centuries, like trading in silk and spices and whatnot. So the Silk Way through China is very famous. One day we will get to China and experience it, hopefully for a Grand Prix.
Did you know that the racetrack in Shanghai was actually built on marshland? So they've got like all these, I was watching the like pre-race stuff and they were taking you through the paddock, and it's like a series of boardwalks that connects like these big glass kind of cubes, and that's where all the teams have their offices for the weekend. They've all got like these big glass cubes. And you can see all the marshland and the reeds and stuff. I saw a photo, actually, of what the track looked like in 2008, I think it was, compared to now. And it was the same shot looking through or down the main straight with the grandstand on the side. And 2008, there was nothing in the skyline. And then now they've got all these skyscrapers in the skyline out near the track.
China's developing, that's no secret. Like, that's not really surprising, but would have been interesting to see. We have touched on going to China to eat, but did you eat at home and did you cook a Formula One themed meal?
I did, but okay, so I had a really crappy week. I was sick for most of it, so then I had to work all weekend, and Shanghai is known for its dumplings, and I would have, I wish I made the xiaolongbao, the little soup-filled dumplings, but I just did not have the time. So my next option was, couldn't find anything that was very typically from Shanghai, you know, like a main dish, but the Sichuan region is really close. It's kind of just next door. So I cheated a little bit and I made a kung pao chicken from Sichuan.
Wow. So, yeah. Is it spicy, kung pao chicken?
It is, but the recipe that I used, again, we all in Nagi, we trust. I used the recipe from Recipe Tin Eats. And
we love Recipe Tin Eats. Yeah.
Oh, we do. I love Nagi. So you can adjust, obviously, how. So kung pao chicken is basically chicken, lots of Sichuan pepper, Chinese black vinegar, Chinese rice wine, soy sauce, some sugar, and Sichuan peppers, chicken, and spring onion. You can obviously choose how much Sichuan pepper you want to put in, and there's a lot of dried chilies in there as well, and you can obviously change how much you put in of that as well. So if you want it to be really kung pao, bump it up. But
And do you and Espen like really hot, spicy food? I'm a chili weakling, I will say. I'll put my hand up and just put it out there. I can deal with a little bit of chili in Italian pasta and Italian European style. Asian chili kills me. Can't do it. And same with hot curries. Can't do it. And I don't enjoy food when I can't feel my lips. I just don't.
Fair enough. Well,
what about you guys?
Being part Mauritian, I grew up eating chili. And my mum actually taught my dad's Italian side of the family how to eat chili. So yeah, I'm really accustomed. The Mauritian food is very similar. It takes lots of influence from India, Asia, and France and Africa. So yeah, we're really used to eating chili, and Espen, my partner, was not a fan. Obviously Norwegians don't really know what chili is,
and that's why I'm asking. Yeah.
So but I put chili in just about everything, and he has learnt and he's grown a tolerance to it, and he's pretty good with chili now. So we could ramp up the kung pao chicken and get a good amount of spice, because Sichuan is known for the Sichuan pepper. It's known for spicy. It's known for, you know, and it would have been sad to have to cut all that out of, and to be honest, I wouldn't have cared. I would have made it hot anyway, because that's what it's supposed to be in just supper. Biggest tip, cooking with chili, always go conservative to start with, because you can add more, but you cannot take it out.
And never chop chili and rub your eyes. Hot tip, kids.
Oh, the number of times I've gone to take my contacts out after chopping chili, and I'm like, oh,
it burns. Have you got a recipe or something you're going to post?
I can share the recipe. Being in Norway, I often don't have the exact ingredient that I need, but the best thing about using Recipe Tin Eats recipes is she always has a massive list at the bottom of her recipes. If you don't have a particular ingredient, she gives you alternatives that you can use. So being in Norway, where it's often hard to get things like Chinese black vinegar, and you know what? I cannot get Chinese cooking wine. I cannot find it. So I have to use.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I have to use dry sherry instead, which is a good substitute. It was delicious. So I'll post the recipe.
Well done for doing a themed meal. So next week, we've got a non-race weekend. So we've got a special, very special guest for the episode next week. And then the week after, we're in Japan.
Yay! I'm so excited for what we've got coming up.
I know, me too. I'm just stoked. And it's been such a great week, right? We've only had to wait like 4 days. Good start to the season. It's going to be a red hot season.
I think so. seeing as we're getting late into the night for you, Di, we're going to say thank you to all our wonderful listeners for tuning in again this episode. If you liked what you listened to, please leave us a comment or a rating or both. Both is great on your favorite podcast listening app. If you want to chat with us elsewhere, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok. We're posting fun things there. Get in touch or email us at andawaywego.f1podcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mon, and thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.